Follow me and ponder the question. What if?
Welcome back, Swamp Kittens, to the latest episode of I Want My MCU TV, the Incomparable Network podcast that covers the Marvel Universe shows on the Disney Plus channels. I'm Lisa Schmeiser, your hostess, and with me, as always, are Kelly Gamont.
Don and I are keeping the scoot scoots.
And Don Mellon.
What? I was working. I was reading a comic book.
We are. It's like I've gotten into a whisper to a scream and all of a sudden we're back in progressive rock. Tonight's episode is all about episode 8 of season 1 of What If, where the premise is, what if Ultron won? And none of us really like the answer. Those of you who are first time and long time listeners to our podcast may or may not be familiar with the drill for our format. This podcast is divided, or I should say every week we aspire to divide this podcast into three parts. The first one is the revision part, reboot, reset.
Remix.
Remix. yes, remix. I'm calling it now. We're already off the rails.
That's why I remember, because it was what if.
All right, yeah, the first part of this particular podcast, or rather we kick off with the remix, i.e. identifying the causal factor that makes the what if episode, what if episode's universe different from the mainstream MCU. Then we segue into reactions, where we get in our feelings and our analyses about the episode and what's going on in it. And then we get into really? Where Kelly and I pester Professor Don with all sorts of questions, and he answers them often to the best of his abilities. We don't deserve him.
But tonight, folks, I got nothing.
tonight's episode is going to be a little bit wild and loose.
Yes.
we have some missives from the Swamp Kitten Army to get to.
Oh, many.
So many. I think we're going to, yes. So I think it behooves us all to just jump right into the remix, which I guess is like throwing the first pitch out on the mound. And tonight, again, the premise that the Watcher, you know, who I've contended is not very good at his job.
Nope.
I believe that to be a popular opinion of him, incidentally.
Oh, man. So tonight he's like, what if Ultron won? Except. And you guys all know this goes back to like Avengers Age of Ultron, where like the whole MacGuffin in that movie was, oh, what if James Spader decides to body snatch Paul Bettany and upload his consciousness into him? And, everyone was like, wow, that's an 80s crossover we never saw coming. And there were fights. And then, and then, you know, Sokovian twins joined. And then all of a sudden there were no more Sokovian twins. And that was the movie, right? And you see the Watcher nattering on about, oh, in this universe, the Ultron thing happened. I'm going to posit, though, that the inflection point is, there's no Pietro or Wanda in this universe.
No.
I noticed that first. And then second, when they have the whole, oh, everyone like watched appalled as they stood around the cradle and I guess brought it gifts. Like Natasha is with them. And like, that's a thing that actually didn't happen in the movie, because by the time we have the Vision's origin story and that whole stand around the cradle scene, it's the five dudes from the Avengers plus Pietro.
So what
I'm saying is Pietro and Wanda might have been your balance points, thereby confirming my theory that, wow, Uatu is terrible at this.
Yeah,
he's so like, bad at this.
He just keeps missing where the actual inflection points are. So anyway, the whole premise is, oh, what if Ultron won? And the answer is, if Ultron wins, then he turns the Earth into a 1982 made-for-TV movie that scarred me for life called The Morning, The Day After.
The Day After.
The Morning After is the Marine McGovern song.
Oh, okay.
That's the 1970s Poseidon Adventure. The Day After is what aired in the 80s. And I dare say traumatized the back half of Gen X.
Yep, it did.
Yes. Like, that was traumatic. Yes.
Like, I don't know about you, Kelly, but when I was watching it, like I basically like flashed back to being a fourth grader and being scared spitless that, oh my God, we're all going to die. Nuclear Armageddon is coming for us right now.
Yes, it was terrifying. I remember it vividly. Yes.
That whole sequence took me back in the episode. So
You are correct about the inflection point. There's something wacky going on there and very annoying about Uatu, who really needs his supervisor to come in and just go over that focal review very closely. Because,
yes,
you know, he's actually narrating it and they're showing on screen where the supposed inflection point is, but it obviously had to happen before that, because the Avengers had to decide together to actually go through with Tony Stark's plan. And what the heck is Pietro doing there? So I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And where's Waldo? Where's Wanda? And I don't know. Yeah, yeah, it's a little odd. But that aside, mm-hmm. It was okay.
Yeah, this whole episode, basically Ultron kills everything in the known universe, and then only then he can listen to the Watcher, I guess, because there are no more victims screaming, and the Watcher inadvertently tips his hand that there's a multiverse, and Ultron's like, oh, at last, a new to-do list. And, you know, things get punchy because it's Marvel and it's Act 3. And then by the end, we find out that Uatu has, in fact, been keeping, like, the tentacly Doctor Strange from a few episodes back, like, in a weird little pocket universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we're ever going to get an answer to that question, but what this episode of this show goes, let's just segue into our reactions part at this point, since we're all reacting. But like, what this episode did is, I was like, okay, we've blown up the anthology premise at this point. This is no longer an anthology. This mm-hmm. is just a series of interconnected stories that were not interconnected, but are about to become so. So I'm kind of impressed and also kind of irritated.
Yes.
Because like, what I want to know
is valid.
Was there a reason why everything ends so disastrously in basically every episode save one? And Uatu is like, oh, well, gotta go. When like,
bye. Yeah.
Clearly this is building up to something. Quite possibly building up to an episode where Ice Giant Bro Loki runs into Dictator Loki from the Hank Pym is a Serial Killer episode, and each of them are appalled by what the other is. Or Peggy Carter comes and all of a sudden Iron Man is like, okay, I could get down with this. I don't know. So it's just... Why have all these episodes that end on total bummer notes, unless there's going to be an explanation in the next episode where, like, whoever Uatu made his vow to is going to be like, Uatu, you're terrible at this. Or, or Uatu, you're just nobody. What are you doing here? So, because mm-hmm. that was another thing is he points out, he's like, I made a vow. And I'm like, to who? Like, who is your boss?
That too, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, I want to see your manager.
Well, no, like, who is his boss? Are we going to meet that person? Or is this going to end on the cliff note? Well, the Watcher broke his vow, so I guess that's a shoe that's going to drop in phase 8 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yep.
So there's that. But, I mean, this episode was okay. Like, it was mostly okay. I like the part where Ultron slices Thanos in half using the power of his mind.
Like 8 seconds of Thanos. Like, he comes out like, behold. It was great.
Well, like, what was so funny about that was, I'm like, you never anticipated that happening. Like, you've never gone to a world where you can get killed for the power of an android's mind. I was bummed about watching this version of Carol die.
Yes.
So that was a bummer. I felt like a lot of the people that you or characters that we liked and we saw get massacred, it felt again sort of like when you watch kids dump out all of their Star Wars toys into one pile and then dump in the G.I. Joes and the My Little Ponies to create a crossover event so that they're like tickled by the combinations, because we didn't need to see a second of Korg being taken down by the little drone army.
I mean, we did not.
No, like I get the point. We got the point already. And I was like, these cameos do nothing. They just I guess they're meant to make us feel bad about what Ultron is doing, but like we're 8 episodes in and we've seen lots of worlds destroyed at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, we got to watch Captain America as a zombie get beheaded by his own shield. So I mean, you know, once you get past that point, it, you know, so everything else is gravy. So, that seemed a little gratuitous, but it's an animated film. It's not like they had to do, you know, lots of special guest stars, because none of these people actually spoke. They didn't even have, you know, speaking lines. No. And did you notice the end, the spoiler for everybody, when evil Dr. Strange, super Dr. Stranger, what did we decide to call him? Mad Dr. Strange?
Oh, wow.
Dr. Stranger? Whatever.
But I don't remember, but we decided he was the bad one. End, yeah, the mad doctor.
They said,
like, his shadow is really creepy.
They said also starring Benedict Cumberbatch, because they didn't put his name in the credits in the beginning because they didn't want to give away the twist.
Yeah, what we were up to.
That basically we're getting the band back together. You know, that's basically what's happening is you're snatching Avengers and other heroes from various timelines and universes and patching them together, which is why we're going to see Dr. Stranger and Captain Carter. We saw them together in the this season preview clips. That's obviously coming in episode 9. But I like this because we got some major league Uatu dialogue and appearances and everything else like that.
Yeah.
And we're getting not just appearances. We're getting, you know, Uatu buffed up and kicking some butt, or at least trying to.
So that was a little disturbing. watching somebody who's built like a toddler break out the armor and get going.
I have to say, I did spend a minute. I think at one point in the fighting, I hit pause and just laughed and laughed. This was one of the few where Mr. Kelly joined me to watch.
Yeah.
And boy, did he pick a good one. And I just started laughing when they were fighting. Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Why is that funny?" And I said, "No, Uatu answer, not for hitting." And he's like, "What?" Like, I know you don't listen to my podcast, but I just need you to know that we have this really hilarious moment because Uatu looks like a toddler. And he goes, "Oh, God, you're right." And I'm like, "Yeah." And so last week, Lisa said, "No, Uatu, hands are not for hitting." And we thought it was hilarious. And now here he is using them for hitting. And so all I can hear in the back of my head is Lisa saying that. And it's cracking me up.
No.
And I don't want to miss stuff. So I had to pause.
My favorite Uatu moment in this episode was actually when he's in the archives. And
yes, it's right there. You can get it. It's right there. Should I help? No. What if? But no, you're human. Wait, what?
Yeah. So what I really loved about that is I like that it's the writers directly addressing the why do you bother with Hawkeye on the team? Why do you bother with Black Widow? They're just human compared to everybody else.
Yeah.
And the answer, at least from a Uatu's perspective, is that humans are so tenaciously optimistic, it pushes them beyond their natural capabilities in the service of something bigger, which is a really great message at all times, but a much needed one when you have movie after movie with, "You're very special." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." "I don't want to be." "Well, you have responsibilities because you're special." "No, have father issues too. Okay, fine. You can have the father issues and the responsibility and the special. Can I have wisecracks? You certainly may. Okay, sequel. Like, that's your Marvel movie, and it's nice actually to have something tucked into a TV show where they're defending an innately human capacity for hope. So I mm-hmm. liked that.
I really did appreciate that moment.
I liked the character development for Uatu, where you see him mm-hmm. basically decide this whole inaction thing is monkey shines.
Yeah.
And I also found the moment endearing and a little bit heartbreaking because Clint's done.
Yeah.
Clint is so done. And Natasha knows it, but she doesn't want him to be done. And you see her, like, she really was the heart and soul of the Avengers in so many ways. And she is in this cartoon, too. Mm-hmm. And just the little subtle character interplay there was great. And so was his death, which was like the mirror image of hers in Avengers Endgame. So anyway, Scene in the Archives is just great.
Well, his parts were parts I loved, like in the archives. And I think part of the moment between the two of them sort of felt like maybe she didn't want to admit it to herself.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The back of her head, she knew what time it was. And he, you know, and but she kind of was putting on the show, I think, as much for him as for her, for herself, as far as like making him, like trying to get him through it. And then the moment with when he died, which I thought was really nice, and then the beautiful scene of him plunging into the sea of Ultrons,
yeah,
it was beautiful. It was heartbreaking, but it was really like gorgeous. It was beautifully lit and nicely shot, and the extra slow motion of the falling, and like I loved all of it. And one of the things I noticed about this episode was, for as dark as it was, it had those moments. So it was almost like the photo negative of the Doctor Strange episode, where it, like, the whole thing was dark, and then it got darker, and we had like a tiny moment of smiling when someone continued to call him like Dr. Armani or whatever it was. Ugh. You know,
Dr. Zola. Yeah.
No, in the Doctor Strange episode, because
you're right, Dr. Armani. Sorry,
he was wearing Armani or something. So like,
there's Armin Zola and Dr. Armani.
Yeah. So okay. You get like this one tiny moment of something that is kind of cute in that episode, and the whole rest of it is like, and then the world ended. The end. And so like this episode, to have those fun moments and those interesting moments and those moments of like amusement, where, you know, Uatu says like, you cannot compute what my will can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, wow. And like, and the ups and downs of it. And like Clint, you know, need a hand, you know, don't say it, need a hand. Like,
okay. So how did he lose the arm?
I was, you know, that was another thing about this episode I really appreciated, is like, so he got a metal arm out mm-hmm. of this. And that was another thing. Like, we see Steve Rogers getting sworn in as presumably president.
That and, was in a different non-nuked universe, though, remember?
Right, but it was one of those, like, here's a timeline where a bunch of different stuff happened. And mm-hmm. so I felt like Clint's arm was just another one of those in the timeline we were watching, you know, when Uatu says, this is the one that breaks my heart. And, like, having those moments, like, the comparison I made last time was Into the Spider-Verse, where you can see, like, these are things that we know, but the version in that timeline is not our version, and that's how you can tell it's different. And so mm-hmm. seeing all those different things, and like seeing Wakanda in there, every time he takes a punch, you know, and it's a completely different like universe, like all of those things were really cool and really interesting. And even though this episode is super dreary and mm-hmm. like ends, you know, on a pretty dark note, like you're gonna tell me the salvation of humanity is the bad guy that literally ended all of it like three episodes ago. And watching, like, so to me this episode felt so different. It's one I like a whole lot. It's not my favorite, for the decided lack of scoots as I've established. Yeah, we have a checklist
you
later.
You gotta have standards. That's all I'm saying.
One must have standards.
Yeah.
And that was that was part of, like, but for all of its darkness and for all of its ill omen and all of the dark portent that we get out of this episode and where we are ultimately headed with the last one, like, it still felt like such a good and enjoyable episode, and I had so much more fun watching this super duper dark timeline than I did when it was the other super dark timelines that we watched, where we sort of went, hey, guess what? We all watched the same episode of a TV show, and now we're going to talk about everything but that. like, this felt so much more engaging and interesting. And I wish we could have gotten more of that sort of undefinable quality in the other episodes that we got that led up to this one. That was part of why I sort of now feel even retroactively more grumpy about the two that we weren't fans of, because they could have been much more like this one with a little bit of balance and had some fun and some light moments and some, you know, interesting character advancement. And I didn't really feel like we got those here. And so I was so like in those episodes, and we did get them here, and they didn't take long, and it wasn't the point of the episode, but having those moments really made it such a different experience than those ones that I was super not jazzed about watching.
Dawn, you've been pretty quiet this episode. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was letting you guys go because you were on a roll there.
Dawn has no honking.
Yeah,
I
don't. It's a little bit of a here and there, but my whole point. I can't read off the text that I wrote to you guys earlier today, or we would get a XXX rating on this podcast.
Just 55 minutes of uninterrupted.
Yeah, pretty much. But I was excited because, something actually happened that tied it, tied something else together. What if I'm honked off about anything, I would have to agree with Kelly that we had to wait until the 8th episode, to get here. And I want more of that good stuff. Right, the special sauce that Kelly liked, and I'm pretty sure we're gonna get more for episode 9.
Oh, for sure.
And the question I have is, now they've already approved this for a second season, which both excites and annoys me. And because, like, if they do something in episode 9 tying this together, what does that mean for a second season? Are we going to get 7 more random and then tying it together again? Or are we going to start doing something with this?
Well, I think I have some slight honk for this because this isn't what I signed up for. Was not a season of coherent storytelling. I signed up for Captain Carter.
Yeah.
I signed up for 9 of those. Like, as of now, like, that episode is pretty relatively self-contained, aside from we get some interesting tentacle arms from the Doctor Strange episode. Like, aside from that, like, this one is pretty, like, it's basically a bottle episode, and it's a nice introduction to what if could be. And it was very much like the comic book. And that was the thing that I think all of us sort of liked about it. Dawn maybe didn't, but it was nice to see, if you make one left turn, where all does that ripple out? How does that end up? What happens? And seeing the stuff that was the same and the stuff that changed and the stuff that didn't change was really interesting in that episode. And that's always what if did that was cool, was, what if Pepper had been Iron Man? What if, like the little swap outs that we got in some of these, what if the Ravagers had picked up the wrong kid? Mm-hmm. And like, those sorts of things are really interesting to watch ripple out across the rest of the interaction that they go through in that episode. And they didn't build to anything, and they were not interactive stories, and they were just like those random super custom Lego blocks, and you can stick them on the side if you want to, but they don't have to do anything themselves. They don't have like a particular purpose themselves. And I loved that about them.
I did not, because as I've said before, if I want to read bad fanfic, there are
the internet is free.
right. And so I was here for some coherence. I wanted them to see if they could do something interesting. You know, I wanted them to get the band back together. So I'm glad that they're trying to do that. I'm just slightly on the honko meter.
It was Swampkin
and Gary. Yes.
This week's contribution was honko meter, the untitled Don game, which made me very, very happy.
So, you know, it gets about a one or a two on the honko meter still, but, you know, there's something there, because otherwise, what's the point? I mean, I can lay in bed after I've had way too much coffee and do the what if thing as well.
Yeah,
that's like the premise of every draft on
right. I mean,
yes.
Which is why there's so much bloody fun. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we will be taking a dip into Twitter for response, I think we'll call it this week, for one of our sections that starts with our. We will end up doing that.
My take is anthologies have their place when the each individual story can stand on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, for example, I believe he's now the late Mike Resnick, used to edit a series of anthologies like Alternate Histories, Alternate Despos, Alternate Outlaws, Alternate Kennedys, Alternate Presidents. The thing I loved about those was every story stood on its own. It didn't hook into the next one. You didn't have to get into the elaborate whatevers. And it was a fun mental exercise. Like, what if Mother Teresa decided organized crime was more lucrative than nunning?
There you go.
Or what if it turns out Marilyn Monroe was actually working as a Soviet spy? Things like that. That's it's fun.
Yes.
And I'm also here for things that take an alternate history and build on it and get a little serial. My meep, meep, meep about this show is it seemed like it was trying to split the difference for far too long.
Yes.
And so between that and all of the bummer endings, and I'm like, why do you do this to people week after week unless there's unless there's a bigger picture here? And I feel like when you only have a 9-episode run, you don't wait until episode 8 to tilt your hand. Everybody who's watching this is fluent in how TV works.
Mm-hmm.
This is even something that children's TV shows do, because I've seen a number, well, thanks to who I live with, I've seen like a number of kids' TV series runs, and the best ones make it so that the act 3 episodes over the whole series arcs make sense by the middle of act 2. So with this, I feel like we've kind of lost a little of an opportunity to make either a genuinely interesting and amusing one-off with anthologies or storytelling that's not going to have us going, oh, come on, at the end of next week.
And that's my worry, that we're going to have the, come on. But, you know, the examples you were giving about things you like, again, that's alternate histories of real things. What we've been watching for 7 or 8 episodes now are alternate versions of fiction. That's just different fiction. You know, that's like, you know, I just want to grab somebody and shake them.
Although, you know, Don, what I just realized is because I conflated the two, maybe this is Marvel's way of making us say, okay, there's official canon and we're supposed to like treat it with the same facts or facts that we do with alternate history.
Maybe. That's a pretty obtuse and expensive way to go about it.
They're Disney. They got money to burn.
Yeah, apparently. Ours, the last time I checked.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Lisa. That's what it is that we got one-off episodes, and then it turned out all the one-off episodes were supposed to be a coherent story across the season, and I'm finding that irksome, I guess. So that was the part of it I didn't like. I don't have any really questions for the professor this week.
Okay.
Lisa, I don't know if you do.
No, I do have like a weird MCU continuity question.
Oh, okay.
Which is something that I want to debate with you guys. Which is, we've just come off the series run of Loki, and you remember that in the first episode, there's a whole drawer full of Infinity Stones.
Uh-huh.
Because once they're removed from their universe, they're just not that powerful, right?
Yeah, they don't actually work.
So how is it that Ultron's able to wreak havoc through many different multiverses with the Watcher if his stones are tied to his original universe?
It's very simple. The writers are much more powerful than the Infinity Stones. That's how it works. Yeah. That didn't make a lot of sense. But also, it's like when you don't understand what's really going on, the little energy beams shooting from Uatu and Ultron, what does that really mean in terms of, is one of them essentially using a club and the other one is using a gun, or, you know, what, which one of them brought a knife to a gunfight, right? That's what I'm saying. It's like, all like make-believe. Things like that are at the mercy of convenience in terms of moving the story along. It's just a giant MacGuffin in a way. So and to me, that's always lazy storytelling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. WandaVision, which I dearly love, the show, it was the first one and it was unique. And I like the meta story it was telling. But honestly, when you, and this is my problem with the film Doctor Strange, which I also really like. The problem is when you do magic, you know, it means nothing after a while, right? Because you can do everything. Right. I mean, and we saw that through the Harry Potter movies. After a while, it kind of has no meaning because you have no way of determining whether something has terrible consequences or whether it can be undone or what's actually more powerful than the other thing. And why? For God's sakes, why? You know, it doesn't make any sense. And so I don't like those things like that. Ordinary superhero movies, not in, you know, leveraging or embracing magic, walk up to that line and even go over it sometimes too.
Yeah.
It's like Superman writing intro. You know, I would just rather shoot myself than write the Superman comic book, because how do you write interesting stories for a person that's that powerful? Right. It's really hard to do. You know, you either have to take away their powers or cripple them somehow or whatever, contain them. And when you have people that powerful, I mean, I can't even imagine how they're going to resolve this unless it's some other next episode, unless it's some other wave of the hands, because Ultron is so obviously, you know, powerful. What are they going to give him? A virus from an ex-Nazi?
They're going to get a PowerBook 5300 done. Yeah. And they're going to... No.
Well, like, even if they do manage to upload Dr. Zola, then you have a 2-for-1 with the supervillain special. And all you need is invading Loki from another Earth. And then it's... okay, who used to go opposite the Justice League on the old Super Friends cartoon? The Legion of Doom? Was that
Legion
it?
Of Doom, yeah.
Yeah, you've got like a Legion of Doom situation happening.
I think they want to lead us to the Legion of Doom, but then it turns out to be Mr. Mitzelplick. Kids, ask your parents.
There you go.
You know, I think this episode actually brought up some pretty strong feelings in all of us, because what it's done is it's forced us to confront that while this series is a lot of fun to look at, and it's been really interesting to watch the actors flex, or I should say listen to the actors flex,
yes,
in different ways, and to see how much of the characterization comes down to the actor versus voice actor. Because, mm-hmm. for example, the voice substitutes they've gotten for Iron Man and for Black Widow have been very good.
Yeah.
We're not in love with this series. Like,
no.
Like, all of us are just like, okay, they're going to land the plane next week, but I guarantee you what's going to happen is it's going to be a rough landing. Someone's going to throw up. A beverage is going to get spilled. Some poor flight attendant's going to pitch sideways into the beverage cart. It's going to be a real mess.
That's a good description.
I was thinking about it this week after watching the episode. I was thinking about like how I felt at the end, and comparing that to how it felt at the end of an episode of Loki, or even at the end of an episode of WandaVision, and being really excited to talk to you two about it, but also like, this is really great. Where are they going next? This is really interesting. The thing that they pulled out of the hat this week was a thing I hadn't considered before. Let's talk about Mephisto. Let's talk about stunt casting. Let's talk about what's going to actually happen with Pietro, and like all the different stuff that we got to do. Yeah. And how, like, I don't have any of that with this. Like, I don't, most of the time it doesn't feel like a fun, interesting thing. Like, I'm still super excited to get to talk to you two about it.
Yeah.
But it's not, I'm not, I don't feel it in my heart the way I did with the other two. I don't know how to put it. But it's not, it's not the bit of entertainment and fun and amusement that we got out of the other shows in varying degrees.
It has a feeling of moving the furniture.
That's a good way to put it.
And it doesn't feel like, yeah. It doesn't feel like it's like in the fun way or in the interesting, like, or in an interesting way, like setting something up. Like, part of what we liked about Loki was like, look what we're setting up with all the stuff that they're doing with some of these. And I'm not getting that out of this at all. And so that was part of what I didn't really like about it either, was like, I don't feel like what they're setting up is any fun. And I'm not quite as interested in it as I was in the other stuff that we got. And so that's been, for me, that's been the part that I sort of was like, you know, this isn't, it doesn't feel the same. And that's why. And I was finally able to sort of quantify it, because it's not giving me the enjoyment that I got out of the other shows.
Yeah.
I noticed that they haven't made the show runners or writers that accessible compared to the unrelenting press blitz that WandaVision got, or even the unrelenting press blitz that Loki got. or even the weirdly tentative press blitz that the Falcon and the Winter Soldier got. But I would love to have the writers and the showrunner talk about this and explain, okay, this was our brief, and this is how we decided to get from point A to point B, and we mapped out all the inflection points, and this is what we chose to include, and this is what we chose to reject, because I want to know the underlying logic behind all of the what ifs. And the only reason I want to know the underlying logic is, well, you guys have made me care about how this show is structured and how this whole story is going to end, so I need you to show your work. And no one is showing their work.
No, I feel like that's valid. Like, I want to know. And part of the reason I'm curious is not necessarily because I need to be able to figure it out for myself, but because I feel like I want to know what the overall vision is. Like, right now I can't see it. Like, all I see is the piece that you've given me, and I'm not particularly enthusiastic about it. So I would like to have a little bit of insight into, like, is this a thing that's going to be worth waiting for, or should we just skip ahead directly to the draft where we recast everything in the Marvel universe?
Or just skip ahead to the cocktails.
I mean, were you not doing that all along?
Good
Don,
point.
Because we may need
Good
to have a
point.
Conversation.
I feel like we've exhausted our feelings on this subject.
Have.
And what we should do is we should get into the fun stuff. Shouting out to the Kindle of Swamp Kittens who listen to us every week. They are up on our Twitters. They're up on our Twitters, and we love it. We love it very much. And I want to shout out especially to Swamp Kitten Alex. Yeah, Swamp Kitten Alex is a superstar who points out that with last week's episode, correctly, we should say that Loki had been referred to as an ice runt through at least twice in Thor and Loki. It's implied he would have been a small ice giant, but in this timeline, he's grown to full size. So maybe the divergence is around Loki's birth, as opposed to Odin not being a baby stealing jackball.
Excuse me, sir, is this your baby? That was all I could think of last.
I found it on the ground. Finders keepers. So, you know, if Alex makes a great point, and Alex also, what Alex didn't say in her tweets is that this would be, here we go. Actually, she does say this. Uhura's not very good at his job, is what she said.
I love that you have a passenger on the Owatu's bed.
Well, because I replied to her and said, this is how many points where the Watcher identified a divergence point and we all see another. And she's like, oh, Uatu's not very good at his job. So the other thing that Swamp Kitten Alex is throwing out there for consideration, and I'm giving her full credit for this because if she's right, she deserves the full credit, is she now wonders if Uatu's fantastic incompetence, my words, not hers, have anything to do with Nexus events in the context of the TVA. In other words, is Uatu identifying the original divergences, or is he identifying Nexus events qua the TVA? So,
and
Swamp Kitten Alex, bringing the observations, bringing the theories. We love to see it. We see more of it all the time. Love it.
We love them all.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I would also like to point out that Swamp Kitten Alex is an incomparable member. And one of the member benefits is that you get to join the member Slack. And one of the benefits of joining the member Slack is that then you get to choose a display name. And Alex has changed their display name in Slack to Swamp Kitten Alex, and I had to call it out, and it made me, it warmed my heart so much. I was like, thank you so much. I just want to point out to everyone that we have a publicly admitted Swamp Kitten, and Alex said, thank you so much for noticing. And I'm like, thank you so much for making the change. It was very exciting to me because that's one of those like tiny bits of evidence that people are listening. And that's why I love whenever anybody replies to I want my MCU TV on Twitter. We have gotten this week, we got theories, we got questions, we got information because Alex was first in a series of people. Alex and Peter, Swamp Kitten Peter, and one other person pointed out that the box that I was talking about from last week's episode was the one that they were trying to use. Let's see, I'm trying to find the Tesseract like box in the art was the casket of Eternal Winter from the first Thor movie. Mm-hmm. It was the one that Odin took it with him along with baby Loki. And that's what Lofi was trying to get back from the vault, was this this big blue box. So that was another piece of it. So thank you to everyone who replied, because I knew if it was something that we would get that. And I also want to point out a special shout out on Dawn's behalf for Swamp Kitten Didi, who said listening to last week after watching this week was a mistake, because every time Dawn complained about Uatu's lack of action, I just wanted to say it all happens.
Way to go, Didi. That was great.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, I feel bad, Dee Dee, that you were that was such a frustrating moment. Like, no, really, Dawn, it's okay. So that did make me laugh, because I could totally see being very shouty about that, because I too was very shouty about that when I watched the episode. Was like, Dawn's gonna be so happy when he finally gets to see. So
and also Swamp Kitten Gary, the honkometer, you've cracked me up every week with something new there. So keep it up. I live to go to the Tweety box and discover those things. And I'm a terrible person because I haven't replied to a lot of these. I've simply hearted them in whatever the lingo that Twitter uses these days.
I don't know what the young people call it these days.
I definitely do read them. That really made my day.
Yes. And thank you, Mario, for shouting out Dawn's excellent Spanish. I'd like to point that out as well. Thank you, Swamp Kitten Jody, who immediately replied to last week's tweet that the show post was up with Growl Meow, which I thought
was great. So, it's non sequiturs like that just make my day.
That's the stuff that just makes me so happy. Yeah,
I feel like our growing army of Swamp Kittens and the Kindle is just, you guys are clearly our kind of people, and we are grateful that you are taking this ride with us. And
we are thrilled to bits.
I would also love to hear more of your opinions and reactions in our Twitters. But seriously, this episode, this past one either completely derails the whole premise of What If, which is, oh, it's an anthology show. Or it derails it derails several laws of storytelling. We're not sure which. So,
eeny, meeny, miny. Ugh. Yeah,
yeah. Like, you can't even do a dartboard at this point. It would just be like an M.C. Escher dartboard.
Yeah,
you can imagine such a thing. Like, you end up trying to hit the center, and instead you get in the center of your forehead.
pretty much. Yeah. Also, thank you, Swamp Kitten Gary, for the kittens, Jonesy, which also made me laugh very much. As soon as I got that, it was like almost an immediate response to the shows up. The newly formed intersection of MCU TV and Letterkenny will never not amuse me.
That was good.
I love it so much. So
the only way that could get better, is if the characters on Letterkenny were actually incorporated into the MCU. Because,
oh no,
you know they love Scrappin'.
Giddy up, Gary.
Oh my!
I don't know where this is going to end up, but it's going to be someplace delightful and hilarious, and we are totally going to tell you all about it once it happens. All you have to do to get a shout out on the show and to get adoration like you've just heard is to just talk to us on Twitter. We are I Want My MCU TV. That's the whole Twitter name. And you can get a hold of us and give us your theories and your ideas.
Your best pitches for Letterkenny as members of Alpha Flight. That's what I want this week. Oh my God.
So,
oh God.
Brief
now
pause
I really
on the swap
kitten.
Yeah. Brief pause on the murder lizard content for Lisa because she's got an alternate pitch this week.
Actually, you guys, everybody keeps sending me swamp lizard content, murder lizard content, and I love it. Thank you so much.
I can't tell you how pleasing it is. We got like a picture from Reddit of a sign, you know, only you can prevent new variants. And it's
no, Jeff Youngstrom wins for this week. Jeff Youngstrom wins for his delight for his delightful flag of John Moffat's tweet about the albino alligator with the crab riding on his head.
Crab-a-gator.
Oh, yes. It was so delightful. Anyway, so yes, huge shout out to Jeff Youngstrom, who made a pretty miserable afternoon pretty great.
Thank you, Swamp Kitten Jeff.
Anyway, send us your Letterkenny's Alpha Flight pitches. Send us your Swamp Kitten content. Send us your crackpot theories. We love it all.
And we'll find a way to keep the show going because we just love this stuff. We gotta get something like this at least every other week. So
send us your pitches for what you want in the off season.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we'll take it.
Aside from Lisa's draft of Alpha Flight, which I'm gonna giggle about for a long time now after this.
Are you kidding me? I just want to see Gail in a uniform. Confusing and horrifying would be Ultron robots.
Okay, no, I just, oh my goodness,
Gail's taking him down.
by the way, folks, our pre-show and post-show is actually nuttier than this.
No, you're getting us at our best.
Getting us at our best.
This is well curated content, folks.
Okay, before we devolve into how the skids fit into Alpha Flight, I am gonna call it for the night.
There you go.
It has been my great pleasure to do this latest episode of I Want My MCU TV with Don Melton.
Para todo el tiempo, siempre.
Y Kelly Gilmont.
Copy that, cha cha.
And I'm Lisa Schmeiser. Have a good night, everybody.
Too bad this might spell the end of the world, but that's a story for another day.